Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Y'all, I am so excited because Through the Gryffindor is heading back out on tour. Starting in February of 2025, we'll be performing live shows in Charlotte, Orlando, Tampa, Jacksonville, Atlanta, and Nashville. And as always, we will be bringing all of the magic with a tour-long Jay versus Ben trivia showdown with questions submitted and asked by all of you. And then, of course, we will dim the lights for a live recording of Through the Gryffindor. And y'all, these nights have made for some of my all-time favorite since we have started making content on the internet. It is truly a magical evening, nerding out Harry Potter style with the very best community online. Plus, we have a VIP upgrade for each show if you want to come and meet Jay and I, take photos, ask questions, and score an exclusive signed tour poster before the show begins. We would love to see you. We'd love to meet you, and we hope you will come and join us for all of the fun. Tickets are available in the show notes for every show or at supercarlinbrothers.com.
Welcome, dear listeners. I'm Jonathan Carlin.
And I'm Benjamin Carlin.
And we invite you to join us through the Gryffindor, your one-way ticket to the enchanting world of Harry Potter. So grab your wands and dust off your broomsticks and join us as we unlock the riddles inside the Goblet of Fire, Chapter 2, The Scar.
The Scar.
The Scar.
This episode, this chapter is the one that we did on our West Coast tour live from Los Angeles.
It is the one we did there. We rounded off the West Coast with this chapter.
With this chapter, which was so exciting because it was like, oh my gosh, we're in Goblet. And then the, like, chapter one of Goblet is like not really Harry-centric.
Yeah.
But it's super action-packed with details. And so then we were like, oh, heck yeah, we finally get some Harry Potter action. And it's a bit of a recap chapter.
I mean, it's a recap chapter for sure. It's the last recap chapter.
Yes.
Like, after this, like, Order of the Phoenix, there's no recap chapter. At that point, it's like, yeah, why'd you buy this book if you don't know what's up?
Right. If we're five installments in, you just got to know.
I think you just got to know at this point. Like, we don't need to keep reminding you about things. So, yeah, it's our last recap chapter. And I remember, yeah, we were going into L.A. and I was like, oh, my gosh. Like, how, like, this is, like, maybe the biggest city we've been at. Like, it's the finale, and no, we just have a reek. Like, nothing happens.
I
like,
know.
What are we going to talk about? But then it was totally fine.
It was totally fine. So if there was ever a live show to tune into, if you're not a fan of the live shows, I feel like it's a great one because you can know in the back of your minds that Jay and I, backstage before we went on, were like, what are we going to do? And then we did it. And it ended up being a phenomenal episode. So I'm excited for tonight. But speaking of reminders, it's a weak segue, but I'm seizing the moment as the opportunity to remind you guys that we do have that Through the Gryffindor handmade coffee mug available over at Carlin Brothers Mercantile for the holiday season.
Yes,
it's a very limited run. We brought it up last week, and you guys nearly swept the shelves.
Yes, so we do still have some left, but we are almost out. So if you want one, go get it.
Yes, be sure to go check it out.
But they are, it's like our first real piece of merch that is Through the Gryffindor that is just available to everyone.
Yes,
like we've had some merch at the shows and stuff like that, and we've had some like Patreon things, but like this is like our first real offering to the public, and it came out so good. It's just this big sturdy black mug.
Yes. And it's got like the Griffin knocker in the middle.
Yes.
And like a word from each of the book titles that go around it. So yeah, just really, really cool.
Yeah, really good. Holds 18 ounces. That's probably more coffee than you need, but you can fit that much in there. We did test it.
Yes. I think the website says 14 ounces, but we tested it and it's 18.
It's 18. So don't be fooled. If you're like, I only drink 18 ounces of coffee.
You be rest assured.
Yeah.
Things will be good. You know, the other really cool thing that we have on there is, and these are also now becoming rather scarce, but We did take some of our choice pages from books one and two, and we put them inside of plaques.
Yeah.
So they are like the official pages from our books that have been like commemorated, you know, and yeah. those are also available.
Yeah, we were trying to pick like specific moments from the books, like, you know, the chapter one, The Boy Who Lived, like the title page.
Yes.
There,
yes.
Or like the I Am Tom Marvolo Riddle page, you know.
I think we've also got the chapter where we're introduced to Gilderoy Lockhart.
Oh, yeah, with the Gilderoy. Or there's like, he's on the chapter art for one chapter, then another one is his. I think it's A Flourish and Blast, where he's the chapter art.
Yes.
It's fantastic. I mean,
it was pretty obvious.
Pretty obvious we had to do that one, yes, indeed. All right, but anyway, let's talk about our chapter for the week. Chapter 2, The Scar. So at the end of the last chapter, Voldemort turns around in the chair, kills Frank Bryce, and it's such a strong emotion that he feels that 200 miles away, Harry's scar burns in bed, and it wakes him up. And it's sort of a weird moment for Harry because like his scar has not burned actually since like book one, I think.
Has it been that long?
I think it's been that long. Like it happens in Philosopher's Stone, but it doesn't happen in Chamber of Secrets.
I guess if it did happen in Chamber, and it's funny that we didn't bring that up, but it's a good observation because it would make it so obvious that the snake was so directly tied to Voldemort.
Oh, to Voldemort, yeah.
You know, which is, like, in the end, the fact that Tom Riddle even is Voldemort is a huge reveal. But if his scar had been hurting all year, you would have been like, I think we can guess.
But, like, it also, that's like a good consistency thing, because if his scar hurt anytime he was near a Horcrux, it would just always hurt.
True.
Because he would be one.
Right,
yeah,
right.
So. Yep. That's a good. It's interesting that Horcrux, being near a Horcrux, doesn't activate his scar, but Voldemort himself does.
Only
the piece of Voldemort Prime is what's connected to Harry, which makes you then wonder: does Nagini like burn or anything? Does she have a feeling whenever Voldemort's emotions are high?
Almost certainly.
You know, yeah.
You'd have to imagine.
I mean,
she is formerly human.
Yeah.
For one. I guess there's the question of like when you create a Horcrux in a living creature, does it always create a curse scar? Or is that just the particular instance where there's like the backfiring?
I think the scar is from, I don't think it's the act of making a Horcrux. That's not what he was trying to do.
Yes, right. Yeah. So that's just sort of like where it happened to enter Harry's body through. But the other kind of interesting thing about the fact that Harry's scar is hurting in this particular instance, it's not just the pain itself, but this is the first time that I think he's actually had like the shared bond.
Yeah, like the vision.
Yes, where he's actually like seeing into, which is even kind of a little bit interesting because, I mean, Harry's dreams can oftentimes be a little prophetic, but this case, it's not through the eyes of Voldemort. It's this like omniscient view of the scene, which I think is kind of interesting.
It is, because he's not seeing. Yeah, you're right. He's not seeing through Voldemort, and he's not even seeing through Nagini. He's just sort of like a fly on the wall or something.
Yeah. So it's like you almost have to wonder a little bit. Is there some other kind of prophecy centered magic at play that is allowing that particular perspective, or like what's going on that is allowing like that view of the room? Because even through that whole chapter, it's kind of like the big reveal is finally like, you know, the chair being turned around and Voldemort being revealed to Frank.
And even as we're talking about it, I was like trying to wonder, like, well, is it possible that we the reader are being given the third point, like that point of view? Because like we also hear about like Frank coming up from the house and stuff.
That's true.
Like, which Harry certainly wouldn't have seen, I wouldn't think.
You wouldn't.
Yeah, like, he'd have no reason. Like, maybe from Harry's point of view, he did just, like, overhear the whole conversation and then kill, you know, like.
From
the perspective of Voldemort. But I don't think that's true either, because I'm actually just, like, listening to Order of the Phoenix right now. And if that was the case, like, when Harry sees Nagini attack Mr. Weasley, he feels like he's the one who did it.
Correct.
Right. And like I was the snake. I attacked someone. Voldemort's controlling me. He moved me somewhere else. And in this instance, he's not like, I killed a man, you know.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah. You're right. I do think that's a good distinction to bring to the surface. So, yeah, kind of an interesting piece of magic. But I like your observation there that it's very likely that he's not seeing Frank wake up and go and warm up his hot water bottle.
Yeah, right.
You know, and creep his way up to the house. Maybe he's only witnessing the pieces that Voldemort himself would have been available to be involved with.
Right, whereas we, the reader, just get the full thing from, like, Frank's point of view.
Right, yeah. Right. Okay, we can take that. I'm okay with that particular explanation.
Right, it's also, so let's see, it mentions, too, that it says, the old scar on his forehead, which was shaped like a bolt of lightning, which, like, yeah, we know. Come on, who doesn't know that?
It's like, at this point in time, yeah, if you picked up any Harry Potter book, you must be aware of the lightning bolt.
You must be. But anyway, there it is. It says, was burning beneath his fingers as though someone had just pressed a white hot wire to his skin, which to me, like, makes it sound like it's actually hot to the touch.
Right, like, is it physically hot, or is it... is it like more like a burning sensation?
Yeah, does it feel to him as if someone did that, in terms of like how it like feels on him? But like, are his fingers like, oh my god, that's hot,
like hot to the touch? Yeah. I don't know. I mean, I think I've always interpreted it more as like a searing pain. Like you and I both had surgery when we were kids. We had this like bar in our chest for a little while.
Yes, we did.
And I will sometimes like sneeze and have like a burning sensation in my scars.
Yeah, if I do push-ups and have my arms at just the wrong angle or something, there's like a weird like, whoa, I can feel it. Yeah,
yeah. So that's what I've always imagined it more to be like, but I'm not totally sure. Do you have any reason to believe that this could be like magic?
Just that it says, I mean, I don't know. I just think I've always imagined it. Yeah. Like it's just like a feeling in his head. Not that it physically like is hotter,
right?
But it's described as was burning beneath his fingers as though someone had a white hot wire to his skin.
Yeah, you're right. That phrasing. Yeah.
Like it makes it sound like his fingers can feel the heat or something.
Right. The phrasing makes it sound like it's hot.
Yeah. But yeah. I guess it could just be he's feeling it and it's beneath his fingers, but his fingers don't feel it.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
I guess.
But then there's also, of course, that feeling of like waking up in the middle of the night from like a nightmare and you're just like drenched in sweat.
Yeah.
So it could just be like physiologically hot reacting to
that's true too. Witnessed. Yeah. Let's see. But so anyway, he wakes up. Maybe it burns or not. Let us know what you think. Scar's still painful, and he just starts trying to like collect his thoughts. He stares in the mirror. Skinny boy 14 looked back at him. We said last time that it must be after Harry's birthday. So confirmation, it is.
Yep. And yeah, so that's another one of those like where it seems like typically his birthday is kind of like a big deal to the opening chapters of these books because it's sort of like the end of July. It feels like is almost always where we're picking up the saga.
Yeah.
And that's sort of like, okay, now we got like a brief runway, but we're never spending a whole lot of time like beginning of July.
Yeah.
You know, in this series. So that, I think it's kind of interesting. That's just like, yep, he's 14 now.
Yep. He's 14. So yeah, we're Harry's birthday, whatever. No big deal.
Right.
Let's see. From Harry's point of view, this definitely was like he thinks it's a dream. It says he tried to recall what he'd been dreaming, but of course he wasn't really dreaming. He's more like visiting Voldemort's mind. We learn later that it's basically like when Harry is asleep and his mind is most at rest is when he is most likely to visit Voldemort's because he doesn't have his own thoughts like clouding his mind.
Right.
Yeah. So that's part of also why it happens while he's asleep. And it says it seems so real because it was. He right. actually was seeing it. And it said there'd been two people he knew, one he didn't. So the one person he knew, I guess, was what? Wormtail. And the one he didn't is Frank Bryce.
Yeah. The two people he knew would be Voldemort and Wormtail. And the one he didn't would
two
be
people
Frank
he knew.
Bryce.
Yes. Yeah.
And this is sort of like an interesting setup as well, I think, because what is happening is we've just been giving like a huge... piece of information all through chapter one of this book about like a lot of things that have been going on, a lot of information about Bertha Jorkins and the plan and all those types of details. And as Harry himself is waking up, all of the information, as is so true with so many dreams in real life, they're sort of like bleeding out of his ears a little bit. You know, it's like it's sort of just like disappearing into the ether. But what's kind of funny about it is that I almost think like the way in which this first chapter is written, it's almost meant to do that to you, the reader, as well.
Oh, yeah, because like so much of it, like you're like drinking from a fire hose and you're like, oh, okay, very cool, interesting. And then you kind of like immediately come back to this chapter, which is back to familiar ground, and you're just being like refilled with like very familiar, like extremely familiar information because it's the recap chapter, and all those brand new details kind of get like... like filtered out for like all the familiarity
of
the story.
Exactly. Yeah. So it's almost funny because then, you know, you're going to spend how many pages, you know, 700 plus discussing what happened to Bertha Jorkins. And we were just told that Bertha Jorkins was killed by Voldemort and Wormtail. And it's almost like, I mean, I can't remember what it was like the first time I read this book or if I remembered that they had killed Bertha Jorkins, because she's also a brand newly introduced character who you don't really know.
Who you never meet. You only hear talked about.
Exactly. Yeah. So it's like kind of like this off-page entity. So you don't have any reason. But then it's like when you go back and reread it, it's like, oh, wow, they told us that Bertha Jorkins was killed by these two right away.
Right away. Yeah. And it's like every time they bring it up, everyone's sort of like, ah, Bertha, she's not a big deal. And you're like, oh, Bertha, man, they are really overthinking that. And it's right, like, you know the answer.
Right, right. Yeah. It's like we've already been told by the perpetrators what happened.
Exactly. So, there's that. Let's see. It's interesting that he says, or that it says, he's trying to remember who it was. It says, a small man called Peter, nicknamed Wormtail. So it's like Harry thinks of him like as like Peter still at the moment first.
And that's even kind of a funny one because as we mentioned in last week's chapter, even Voldemort is going to continue to refer to him as Wormtail. So it's kind of like, is this like a little bit of like a, hey, in case you forgot, Peter and Wormtail, like,
yes, it's absolutely what it's trying. That's the intended thing there. Like, yes, Peter Pettigrew, Wormtail, don't forget, those are the two people, right?
Right.
So then we do get confirmation that Harry was not seeing from Voldemort's point of view, because it says he was trying to remember what Voldemort had looked like, but it was impossible. All Harry knew was at the moment Voldemort's chair had swung around and he, Harry, had seen what was sitting in it, he had felt a spasm of horror. So he definitely was not seeing from Voldemort's point of view.
Oh, good point.
Because he could see what Voldemort looked like, which almost seems like he was getting it from Frank's point of view or something, which would be weird, too.
I know. Yeah, this is it's a very unusual like circumstance related to this kind of magic where normally we all I think we're normally seeing through Voldemort's eyes. I mean, this is going to be something that we'll need to keep like a careful watch on as we get more instances of Harry seeing through Voldemort's perspective as we go forward. Like,
yeah.
How is that being told? Or is he seeing like what Voldemort is seeing, or is he seeing the room in which Voldemort is in?
I feel like it does change, like, because like how he locates the, like, well, like the diadem. He doesn't locate the specific, he doesn't know it's the diadem, and he doesn't know where at Hogwarts it is, but like Voldemort is like flashing through the rest of the Horcruxes. He's like, oh, the cave, the ring, Hogwarts, or whatever. And like Harry can like see his thoughts.
Right.
Then he's not like even seeing through his eyes. He's just seeing through his thoughts. But that's also not what's happening here, because it's not like Voldemort is sitting there imagining the third person point of view on the room or something.
Right. Exactly. Like, and I wonder if that's something where Voldemort is so hyper transfixed on the locations of the Horcruxes in that moment that it's like what he's visually seeing is almost like cloud. It's almost like when you stare off into space, like while you're eating like your morning breakfast or whatever, and it's like you're just like lost in thought. You're not actually staring at the wall or out the window. You're just sort of staring.
Yeah.
So maybe then it's easier to, like, you know. Otherwise, like, Harry would pop into his mind and Voldemort would just be like looking off into the distance.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. All right. So anyway, we'll keep an eye on like where Harry is viewing different events from Voldemort's mind or point of view or Horcruxes or Nagini or whatever.
Exactly. Yep. Yeah. Yep, perfect.
Let's see. And then I love the description of how Harry is like having trouble remembering the details of it. It was like trying to keep cupped water in his hands. The details were trickling away as fast as he tried to hold on to them. That is such a like relatable feeling. Like when you wake up and you're like, and you're like trying to remember your dream and it's just like, it's just going away. And it's like, you were just living it so vividly. And for whatever reason, your brain is like, nah, you don't need that. Just, it's gone. Forget it.
The most amazing thing to me about real dreams is like the extent to which you have designed like a set that like made perfect sense when you were inside of the dream.
Yeah.
And then when you're attempting to explain it to somebody, you're like, and then we were in a bowling alley and I don't know why that's important, but we were, you know, and it's like you realize when you go to tell somebody else all of the details that you then need to include because they feel relevant.
Oh, I know. Like, they never make sense, like, after you start saying them out loud. But, like, in the dream, you knew exactly what was going on.
Yeah, definitely.
Like, it was not weird at all that you turned around and it's like, and I was talking, well, I was talking to you, but you looked like my childhood best friend, you know, Zach, and you were telling me this thing, And then we started running for some reason, but then we had to steal like a crystal, and it's like, and you're like, wait a minute, none of that made sense. Yeah.
But it was me, but I was Zach, and there was a crystal?
Yeah, exactly. Yes. What do we need it for?
It was really important.
I don't know. We kept trying to like run, but we were like running in slow motion, and
I hate that feeling.
I hate the slow motion run dream. Like gravity is like not working properly. It's like, yes, taking me forever to hit the ground again. Like if I could just, I could go. What's holding me back? And then Harry, so like part of this description says, like Voldemort and Wormtail had been talking about someone they had killed, though. Harry could not remember the name. And boy, that's a bummer, because like you said, for the rest of the book, even though they will address Bertha Jorkins by name 100 more times and wonder about this, Harry has, like, it won't like remind him. It was like, oh, it was Bertha Jorkins. That it, like, he is not going to remember that name at all.
Right, which is kind of interesting, because like way, way, way later in time, like in Deathly Hallows, there's the whole situation where I feel like they're trying to remember Gregorovitch, and Ron is like, do you mean Golgovitch? Plays Seeker for the,
yeah,
blah blah blah. And like then finally Harry is at the wedding and he's like talking to Crumb and he's like, Gregorovitch, that's why I thought Quidditch.
Yes.
You know, and it's like that, like Harry has the ability to pull these like little sparks of information out of his brain. I did a terrible job recapping that situation.
But no, that makes sense. We'll find out later in this book that Victor Crumb's wand was made by Gregorovitch.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. There we go. We're right on topic. But yeah, you would think that this would tickle his memory faster.
You'd think so, especially because it was Voldemort and it was someone he murdered and it's something he's going to wonder about. But no, he will not remember. And that is a shame, because it would open a lot of locked doors for him.
It definitely would.
If he could remember that Voldemort was already the person who killed Bertha Jorkins. But he does remember they're plotting to kill somebody else. Him!
Him! Oh, man.
Whoops.
I hate it when that's the case.
That's, oh, no, not me.
Not me.
Yeah. And that must be so, like a terrible feeling, where you're like, wait, was it real? Because if it was real, that's kind of a problem. But it was probably just a dream. It's only ever been a dream my whole life.
Right,
but
right.
There was that thing that happened last school year with the rats. So.
Where, yeah, and then like the prophecy, you know, the reunite with his master.
Yeah,
and,
yeah, yeah. There was all that stuff.
And it's like that particular person happened to be
in the dream
with the person who killed my parents. So unfortunately, I'm starting to think this is real.
Yeah, exactly. But then it's like, it seems like Voldemort had a body. And it's like, well, how could he have a body?
How could he have a body? I mean, that would be so unlikely. But it's kind of like a small little weird scaly body.
Weird scaly body, yeah. They just sort of like cobbled together out of unicorn blood and dreams.
Yeah.
Yeah, so anyway, lots to consider for Harry here. And he's going to be wondering what to do for the rest of the chapter. So then we start getting just a lovely recap of like some of the items that like Harry owns. That I love that says there was an extraordinary number of unusual things in his rooms. Just sort of like very fun. But we see that Hedwig is out because her cage is empty. He'd been reading a book before he went to sleep where it says men in bright orange robes are zooming in and out of sight on broomsticks, throwing a ball to one another, which I think is very fun because this is, Flying with the Cannons. And that is a book that Ron gave him. Like, there's a whole, they're like, that's like a passage. You hear Harry open that book, and now he's reading it later. And
yeah, now he's reading it like down the line. Yep, yep, that's amazing.
It does say he walked over, it says, in the book, it says he picked it up and watched one of the wizards score a spectacular goal. And I was like, what? Are you sure about that? The cannons were scoring a spectacular goal?
I don't think that they've been known to score spectacular goals.
They have not.
That's not really like what they're known for. They're known for their hit song.
Chud the cannons, boom, 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 we are not pirates. Which, fun fact, if you go to the Chud the Cannons Wikipedia page, like, the Super Carlin Brothers made up chant for the Chud the Cannons is listed as like a fact about them.
Boom, pound it.
Boom, we did it.
Boom, nailed it.
Boom, yep. Boom, boom.
Boom, boom, boom.
We are not pirates.
We have made it.
We have made it. That's it, yes.
But there is a line here that I think is actually really representative, because the next thing it says, he snapped the book shut. Even Quidditch, in Harry's opinion, the best sport in the world, couldn't distract him at the moment. And like, I know that's kind of like a small line and it's easy to kind of just like disregard it or whatever, but like I think it's very representative of the life that Voldemort is actively stealing from Harry. Like,
yeah,
Harry, who is 14, is not even permitted to daydream about his favorite sport while he's on summer holiday
right.
in the middle of the night. And right. it's like, this is a challenge. This is a burden that almost nobody at this age is being faced with.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, it's like, you know, this is Harry's favorite thing. Like when he went to cast his first Patronus, it was the memory of flying a broomstick for the first time. Like, this is something he has like a deep love and passion for, and it's just being taken from him because this villain wants him dead.
Yeah, pretty much. Then he starts looking out the window, and I like, it might seem like a very non-important sentence, but I like the description here. It just says, Privet Drive looked exactly as a respectable suburban street would be expected to look in the early hours of Saturday morning. And I like that sentence because when Harry first arrives on Privet Drive, it's kind of the same scene that is described to you, the reader. It's like Dumbledore arrives on the very suburban street of Privet Drive, and it looks exactly as you'd expect it to look.
Right.
It's like very normal. It's almost like, it's like the bridge has now been gapped. It's like, this is where the story started with Voldemort, and now, boom, here we are. We're back to where we started. The story is back. Like,
yes.
He's like, you know, like everything else has been Harry's entry into the wizarding world. Now we're back. Now we're back to where we started. The story picks up again.
And I mean, even the very next line, it says, all the curtains were closed as far as Harry could see. Through the darkness, there wasn't a living creature in sight, not even a cat.
Not even a cat, which is almost definitely referenced to McGonagall being there.
Yes, absolutely. Because like, otherwise, what's the point of bringing that particular detail up? Because just exactly like you said, like the story starts in chapter one, The Boy Who Lived, with McGonagall as a cat looking on this very scene.
Yeah.
So we're right back.
And like, that's the night he, or I guess it's the day after, but it's the day after he got the scar, and now the scar is burning again.
Yes.
And we're sort of like right back on that same little street there. So just like a tiny little, like you probably just read over that a million times, but I think that is very intentional. It's supposed to like be like bridging, like, okay, Harry is really through the beginning stages.
Yes.
And like now we're back to Harry versus Voldemort prime.
Right. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Yep.
Let's
see here, because it's been Chamber of Secrets with Tom Riddle, Diary, and then Prisoner of Azkaban, mostly just Sirius and Peter situation. So yep. now we're back to like, yeah, back to basics.
Back to, yeah, the real fight begins.
The real fight begins.
Which is mostly what this book is going to be about. Let's see. Then we get some updates on what the different scars Harry has gotten here. He'd lost all the bones in his right arm once. That's from Lockhart. The same art had been pierced by a venomous foot-long fang not long afterwards. That was the basilisk.
Oh, hold on. Yeah, pause right there. Was it ever described as being a foot long prior to now?
I think it was.
I don't think it was.
No?
I don't think... I do not think that... It is I think it's described as a large fang. I don't think it has ever been described as a foot-long fang.
Foot-long is big.
Foot-long is that's a big fang.
Yeah, there's no doubt.
So anyway, I mean, I had that like little like mark there, and I was just like, wait a second. Was it ever? And I think I went back and double checked. I'm like remembering from my notes here because we've now read this like 2 months ago for tour. But any which way, yes, I don't think it was ever described as being a foot long. That's a big fang.
Okay, yeah, it is, no doubt, huge. Of course, Harry survives that thanks to Fox the Phoenix crying on it. And then he says, like, you get the line. He was used to bizarre accidents and injuries. They were unavoidable if you attended Hogwarts School of Witchcraft and Wizardry and had a knack for attracting a lot of trouble. Which, at like the first half of that sentence says, they were unavoidable. And it's like, are they? Are they unavoidable? Because I don't know if everyone's getting these kind of crazy injuries, but had a knack for attracting a lot of trouble.
Yeah. Well,
there it is. Yeah.
But yeah. Then, of course, if you're Draco Malfoy and you get one of these unavoidable injuries, I mean, maybe it is less common than we think, because his unavoidable injury basically leads to the sentencing to death of a hippogriff. So,
yeah,
you know,
right.
I mean, maybe it's like everybody's like, guys, injuries happen all the time. We're at Hogwarts, you know, like this is no big deal. Harry, remember his arm hole situation? He lost all the bones in it.
Yeah.
But it's like,
yeah, no one raises an eyebrow to be like, hey, that teacher disappeared his bones. Maybe he should be fired.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Or beheaded.
Or beheaded.
By McNair.
Yeah. Yeah. No, doesn't happen. Right. Yeah. But, you know, Draco gets a little scratch and everyone's up in arms about it. Ooh. Arms with bones in them. You know what I mean? Let's see. So then we've got, we get a description of the last time the scar hurt him. It had been because Voldemort was close by. So I think the first time it ever happens is when he's in the forest doing detention with Hagrid, and he comes across Quirrell drinking the unicorn blood.
Yep.
And then it happens again, obviously, when he's in the mirror chamber with Voldemort.
With Voldemort, yeah. Yep, who just is there at that point in time.
Yeah. So, it used, like, previously when it started, it's just because Voldemort had been nearby. But, you know, Voldemort, he is trying to reason it out. Voldemort couldn't be here now. The idea of Voldemort lurking in Privet Drive was absurd, impossible. And what's funny is that it's not, like, impossible, I suppose. But even if he was there, he could not get to Harry.
Yes, I love that line, because this is the thing about Harry constantly being sent back to the Dursleys, despite the fact that the Weasleys absolutely would have taken him if it had been presented, or even the idea of him going to live with Sirius at some point in time. But the bond of blood charm that Dumbledore placed upon Harry basically means that as long as he is able to call Privet Drive home, he can't be harmed there.
Yeah.
So it's funny that Harry doesn't know that piece of information,
right?
But he is correct in this assertion. It is impossible to think that he could be there.
Yeah. But I also think what's funny is that it says, like, he says, the idea Voldemort couldn't be here now. The idea of Voldemort looking in Privet Drive was absurd, impossible. And yet, just last year, like, you might have felt like the idea of Sirius Black being here was absurd. And yet, he totally was.
He totally was. He was, like, right there.
He
down
was
the
like
street.
Right yeah. there down the street. So not entirely impossible. Although Sirius wasn't, like, a bad guy in the end. But either way, yeah, bond of blood is protecting Harry, so not a problem.
Yeah, the next thing that we get here, though, is it says, Harry listened closely to the silence around him. Was he half expecting to hear the creak of a stair or the swish of a cloak? And then he jumped slightly as he heard his cousin Dudley give a tremendous grunting snore from the next room.
Yeah.
This is just like an interesting little piece of continuity that has to deal with the paper-thin walls in the Dursleys' household.
Yes.
Because literally next year, mm-hmm. Dudley is going to be overhearing Harry's nightmares in the middle of the night about the loss of Cedric.
Yes.
And he will kind of like use that information against him to bully him a little bit. So it's kind of funny because, yes, this ability to hear through the walls is something that like continues.
It does continue, yeah. And it will be like next year, yeah, Dudley will turn it against Harry.
Yes.
Yeah, and be like, who's Cedric, your boyfriend?
Right, yeah. Yep.
And then he's like, and then that, yeah, it's crossing the line for Harry, and he pulls out his wand, and you're like, uh-oh, Harry, calm down, dude. Yeah, not so good. Let's see. Yeah, so we get more descriptions of the Dursleys here. I love it says, asleep was the way Harry liked the Dursleys best. Just like, yep, just unconscious. Don't have to deal with them at all. But obviously, we were reminded that they hate and despise magic. He's as welcome in their house as dry rot. And you're reminded that they're continuing to tell everyone that he went to St. Brutus's Secure Center for Incurably Criminal Boys, which, again, how does that make them look good? I don't know.
Yeah, this has never come across as one of those details that it's like the Dursleys haven't thought through their plan. And, I mean, it's the perfect kind of... it's very consistent with how they are. This is like even the... inner turmoil Vernon is going to have over sending Harry to the Quidditch World Cup, because it would make him happy to send him here, to send him there,
yeah.
Which he doesn't like to make Harry happy, but then it also means Harry won't be there anymore, and he likes it when Harry's not there.
Right.
And so this is almost like exactly that kind of like divide where it's like it makes them look bad, but it also makes Harry look bad, and maybe that's more important to them than...
It does seem like making Harry, actively making him miserable, like weighs on them pretty heavy. It's yeah. not just like they're like, well, it's not just that we don't want you here. We're pretty sure we also really want to make, like, we want your life to be bad.
Yeah, yeah.
You like, know?
I mean, we're going to lengths to do this.
Right.
I mean, to be honest with you, it's a lot of work.
Right, I know.
It's kind of exhausting.
We don't like you. We don't want you here, but we also really just want it. Yeah, we want it to hurt, you know? So in a way, we do want you here so we can make sure it hurts.
Right. We get to enjoy that part.
Exactly. So yeah. And it's weird that that's such a sticking point for them, although normally they do eventually just relent and let him go on whatever thing they're doing.
Yeah.
But let's see. We have the line here that Harry had never been able to confide in them or tell them anything about his life in the wizarding world. And that is just such a bummer because he has so many bad things happen to him. And like, this is like exactly what Harry is never allowed to have, which is like a like parental figure in his life
yes.
at all.
Yeah.
And it's like, just imagine, even if he'd been able to talk to them about it and they were like understanding at all, like what a difference it could have made for Harry.
I know. And it's funny too, because so often, and even it's going to be the case in this very chapter, Harry's going to struggle with the idea of communicating with an adult over his issues.
Yeah.
Or going and asking for literally just anybody in charge to help him out with what's going on. And I mean, sometimes it is just the case that, like, at the end of this book where Fudge just won't believe him. He just won't take him seriously, and he's going to be ignored by all authority figures. But it even starts to, like, make sense when Harry explains it in this particular capacity, because, like, Harry has not exactly been given reason to believe that adults are there to help him.
Right.
And so it's almost kind of like, I almost think that helps further explain why Harry is always so determined to not seek out that type of assistance,
right,
is because it's like he doesn't even know that that's like a move you can use. That,
right.
That, like, most of the time adults do want to help you.
Yeah, and like even when he will eventually settle on like writing to Sirius, he's like still feels almost like embarrassed by it. He's just like, oh, what am I writing to people telling them that my scar hurt? Like, what, shouldn't I be able to handle it? Like, okay, you know, like,
right,
you know, yeah. He like doesn't really consider his own problems like worth telling anyone right. else at the same time. Also in this chapter, I noticed I wrote this down. We're reminded that the Dursleys are Harry's only living relatives, in case you're wondering where the rest of them are. The full explanation on Wizarding World, like in the Pottermore archives, for like what happened to Lily's parents are that they, quote, died normal Muggle deaths. So they're dead. Don't know how or why, but that's the full explanation we're given.
Okay.
And then, so that's Lily's parents, obviously. And then James's parents, Fleamont and Euphemia Potter, both died of dragon pox after James and Lily got married, but before they had Harry. So they never met Harry.
They never met Harry, which is, I mean, it's a narrow window.
Narrow window.
This again goes back to like a calculation error I've always kind of like felt in the back of my mind, where it almost feels like the date range that James, Lily, Sirius, Lupin, all them went to school is almost like set a decade in the wrong direction. Like,
yeah.
Like it almost seems like it would make a lot more sense for them to all be like 31 versus like 21
right.
at the time of yeah. their death. Especially because there's even like a bizarre gap about that length of time where Voldemort seems to sort of like fall off a little bit, where he's like not an active threat to the wizarding world, despite the fact that he would already have like Hufflepuff's cup and Slytherin's locket, and he's like made his Horcruxes,
right.
and he's like ascending to power and gaining followers. And
I think it might even be in this chapter. Yeah, I think it's on the very next page. It said Harry had been a year old the night that Voldemort, the most powerful dark wizard for a century, a wizard who had been gaining power steadily for 11 years, arrived at his house. So it's like, yeah, like 11. There's like, apparently Voldemort's like reign of terror out in the open lasted 11 years, ending in 1981 when he attacks Harry.
Right.
So that means it starts in 1970 officially,
which I believe is when, I think it's even before any of them would have started school. I'm pretty sure Lupin was born in 1960. He started Hogwarts in 1971. So would James, Sirius, Peter, and
yeah.
Lupin. So I would almost like, I mean, this it would mess with too many timelines to make this modification. I almost think that they were meant to be born in 1950 and start school in 1961. And then like,
oh, right. Like, you know, well, but it like makes sense because like eventually we'll find out like, you know, like when we hear like from them during their time at school, like Lily is accusing Snape of like, oh, don't, you know, you all want to go join up with the Death Eaters. Like, you're not even shy about it or whatever.
Right.
So it's like, and it just says he was gaining power. So maybe it's not like a full on reign of terror. I'm basically in control. It's just sort of like, that's when he's like, yeah, things are getting a little bit worse and a little bit worse and a little bit worse. And I'm recruiting and stuff like that.
Right. Yeah. That makes sense. Yep. So anyway, neither here nor there. Just, I always do think it's just surprising that James and Lily were just so young when they died. And going back to specifically the fact that James's parents would have been there for the wedding and then not the birth of Harry, because you're literally talking about a span of 3 years.
Yeah.
You know, like it's a very narrow window for them to have been alive and then not alive for.
Right.
Because even Sirius, I think when he was 16, goes to live with the Potters. So like presumably at that point in time, they were fit enough to still, you know, maintain a household. You probably wouldn't go live with people whose parents are like on their deathbed.
Yeah.
So I think.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's the point. Let's see here. Next page, we've got, it was because of Voldemort that Harry had come to live with the Dursleys in the first place. If it hadn't been for Voldemort, Harry would not have had the lightning scar on his forehead. If it hadn't been for Voldemort, Harry would still have had his parents.
Yes. Yeah. Yep. Very sad. Very sad. That's obviously just like recapping how, you know, Harry came to be the chosen one.
Right. Yeah. Yep. Yep. It says Harry had been a year old the night that Voldemort, the most powerful dark wizard of the century, had attacked his parents. And it's exactly 15 months old is the other detail that, had never fully contextualized to me until I had a child of my own. But whenever I think of Hagrid bringing baby Harry, to the Dursley's doorstep, yeah, I always picture like a baby, you know, but
yeah,
but he's 15 months old. Like my daughter was walking at 15 months old.
Oh, right.
So it's like when,
well,
when
and like Harry will eventually learn is like riding around on like the toy broomstick or whatever.
Like while he's still living with the,
yeah,
Potters.
With the Potters. Yeah.
So it's like he's a baby, but he's not like a baby baby.
Right. He's not like an infant.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, but he's only like just a little, not quite a toddler.
Right.
Maybe, but yeah, a 1 year old.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, isn't there some fun fact about like the 9 3/4 thing with the dates here?
Yes, because yeah, this is the thing. So that because it is 15 months, that is 1 year and 3 months. 3 months is 1/4 of a year. And Hagrid arrives to pick him up on his 11th birthday, meaning that he lives with the Dursleys from the time that Hagrid drops him off till he picks him back up for exactly to the day, 9 3/4 years.
Yes. Okay. That's it. That's, yeah. I love that fact.
That is so cool.
It like, is so, cause it is down to the day.
It's down to the day.
Yeah. Yeah. That's so fun. That's a really cool bit of math there. We should make a TikTok about that.
That would be a good one. That yeah, would be a good one.
Yeah. That would be a good one. Also, it says Voldemort, the most powerful dark wizard for a century. So obviously we know that like Grindelwald takes place in that century, but this means that, you know, obviously he's worse than him. But like who else? Who's the other dark wizard from a century ago, you know?
That's a good question.
Yeah. Don't know.
I know, yeah, because you even have like the quote, just to go to a different theory, like Harry's the first year seeker in a century, and
yeah,
in our theory has always been that the last one would have been Albus Dumbledore,
yeah,
himself.
Mm-hmm.
And so it is interesting whenever we use that century terminology, because it means that whoever that person would have been a century prior would have been relevant to like Albus's parents.
Yeah, you'd think so. And then this is like one of those where it's like, I really got to finish Hogwarts Legacy, because that takes place 100 years before the events of Harry Potter.
Right.
And so you're like, oh, like, but like, as far as I could tell, it's mostly like this like goblin who's like the main villain,
okay,
in the story. But it's like, I don't know, you, where I'm at in the story, there's like one of your professors seems like maybe he's not going to be so great either.
Oh dear.
Or like, he seems like your best friend, but like, I keep thinking like, this guy is not trustworthy. Like, I don't trust you at all, dude. So maybe it's him. I don't know.
Maybe it's him.
I haven't gotten to the end yet. So, that'd be funny to look into further. But then is he like the most powerful? Is he that bad? I don't know. That'd be crazy. Let's see. Arrived at his house, killed his mother and father. This is, so in this book, we're going to learn about Avada Kedavra and stuff. So there's like a lot of dancing around and building up the killing curse until that point. Like we heard it in the last chapter where it was like, he raised his wand and there was like a blinding flash of green light. And like, we've heard about the green light before. And now it says Voldemort had turned his wand on Harry and performed the curse that had disposed of many full grown witches of wizards and his steady rise to power. And it's like, again, it doesn't say he's performed the killing curse, just the curse. That curse. So it's like, it's setting you up to wonder, what is this spell?
Yes, you're definitely, yeah, you're meant to be like, very enticed into wanting to know more about,
yeah,
what has happened. And I do remember, like, this is another one that's like hard to rewire your brain a little bit, because like, it's hard to go back to the existence where you don't know what happens in the other set of books,
yeah,
you know, in 5, 6, and 7. But it, this was a huge mystery when you've been reading just the first four. Like, what happened to his parents?
Right.
What's the Green Flash?
Yeah.
How were they killed?
How were they killed? Yeah. Yeah. So there it is. That's obviously going to be a Vatican offer, which we will finally learn about in this book. Which is good. And then we learn, you know, the regular information. It had not worked. It repounded on Voldemort. Voldemort had been reduced to something barely alive. This is also setting up, like, Horcrux stuff for down the line.
Yep.
Just that, like, he's just sort of that vaporous mist, almost extinguished, but not. How did he survive if he got hit by the killing curse? You know,
right.
I don't know.
Yep. His power's gone. His life almost extinguished. Voldemort had fled. The terror in which the secret community of witches and wizards had lived for so long had lifted. This is a very important singular line for something that we do a lot over on our channel, Super Carlin Brothers, where we make our What If series.
Yeah.
Very frequently, we will have it end up being the case that, like, if Voldemort doesn't fall on this particular night for one reason or another, like, let's say Peter doesn't betray the Potters, then he can't break through the Fidelius charm. So usually what we end up having happen if Voldemort is just still powerful for this decade of time is create like a false calm,
right?
Basically by going like dormant. And I think that that's basically what's happening here is that, like, despite the fact that like Voldemort's not completely gone, it basically has lifted, the reign of terror that he had left over all of these people.
Yeah.
So it's like, even though the fact that they don't even know that he's gone for good, it still allows them to go back to like life as,
yeah,
you know, life as usual.
And I always feel like it's fairly reasonable that, like, you know, people always ask, like, what would have happened if, you know, Sirius just had been the secret keeper and,
right,
like, you know,
right, yes,
Peter couldn't have told him where the Potters were or whatever. And it's like, I don't think it's unreasonable that that would have been his plan, because Voldemort is dead set on killing Harry because he, you know, he knows the half of the prophecy that, like, the one with the power to vanquish the Dark Lord approaches.
Right. And he doesn't want him to get any more powerful.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, like, Voldemort, and like even in the very last chapter, he was like, I've waited however long to come back. Like, a few more months won't make any difference if we can get Harry Potter.
Exactly.
It's like Voldemort has like the mind of someone who plans on being immortal. And so he, like, he does not mind waiting 10 years for the, like pretend he's vanished. Let people think it's safe out there. Let Harry go to school where he'll be a little bit more in the open and I can finally attack him again.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
He is patient. If nothing else.
He is patient. Yes. So there, you got to give him that, I guess.
Yep.
But let's see. And then obviously Harry had become famous. So this is like, it's kind of funny that this whole paragraph happens. Like, on this one page, you learn that Harry was 1 year old when he was attacked by Voldemort. And by the end of it, it's sort of like, yeah, that's sort of just like a recap of like the first three books there. You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
There you go.
we're up to speed.
Yeah. Up to speed. You got it. Everyone in the Wizarding World knew his name. He's super famous. But now he's still got two nights. It says there's a fortnight to go before he got back to school. So that means it's like mid-August right now, because obviously they'll go back on like September, like the last day of August on the Hogwarts Express.
This means he's been enduring six long weeks at
the Dursleys. Yes. Yeah. They're 8 week summers, which sounds really short.
It does sound really short.
Yeah.
It does sound really short.
Yeah.
I mean, but it's probably because, like, I have such fond memories of summer when I was a kid, but for Harry, it's like he can't wait to get back to school.
Yeah. I know. It's like such a different thing from like regular kids who are just like, yay, summer.
Yay.
Yeah.
Okay. So here's an interesting one. So we just did a J versus Ben episode on Super Carlin Brothers, where we did like the most challenging quiz from Prisoner of Azkaban, because we just finished reading the book here on Through the Gryffindor. So it's like, theoretically, we should know the story as well as we've ever known it, because we've never read it like this before.
Right.
And one of the questions inside of that episode is, what time is it after Harry's birthday that he realizes that it's become his birthday?
Yeah.
And the answer is 1 a.m.
Yeah.
He had already
one
been,
hour.
He had been 13 years old for 1 hour without realizing it.
Yeah.
So this means that in the future, if we're asked that question, we need to remember that it has been 14 days after his birthday.
That's right.
How long has it been?
14 days.
A fortnight.
Well, yeah. No, he says there's a fortnight to go.
Well, a fortnight to go, I mean, as far as months are concerned, it feels like half a month.
Oh, I know, but like, that's,
oh, you're
like,
right, though.
But that's only 14 days.
It's only 14
and
days.
And there's more than 28 days in the month.
So that means it's been, oh, now you have to do math. So it's been 16 days.
Yes.
Okay.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Okay.
Remember this.
He has a Fortnite to go.
He has a Fortnite to go. We're going to remember that. I bet one of us writes Fortnite and we're going to be like, oh no, that's what it is. Anyway, okay. At least we know ourselves well enough. But it says a Fortnite because he looks over at the birthday cards his two best friends had sent him at the end of July. What would they say if Harry wrote to them and told them about his scar hurting? And at once, Hermione's voice first... Might I point out?
Yes, yes.
It's not his best friend Ron that he hears.
Oh no, he's thinking about Hermione. Oh yeah.
I just like to poke that bear every once in a while.
I know, absolutely.
Anyway, but Hermione's voice seemed to fill his head, shrill and panicky. Oh my gosh, I didn't even realize this, but I had wrote, "Oh look, Hermione's voice first." I drew a little winky face.
That's so funny.
I made the same comment 2 months ago when I wrote this.
That's so funny.
That's so funny. Yeah. Your scar hurt, Harry. That's really serious. Write to Professor Dumbledore, and I'll go check common magical ailments and afflictions. Maybe there's something in there about cursed scars. This was another thing that I thought was really funny is we're going to get a glimpse as to how in Harry's mind he would imagine both Hermione and Ron's reaction. And this is like how into the story I am. But as I'm like, man, Harry, you nailed it. That's exactly what Hermione would say.
Right.
As if it's not the person who also writes Hermione who is writing Harry's interpretation of what Hermione would say. So it's it is exactly what Hermione would say.
Right. Yes. Yeah. It's funny how if you write it down, that's how it happened.
Yeah exactly. Right? Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I love his interpretation. He's like, he doubted very much whether a book could help him now, when I was just like, well, ironically, this particular book series would be very helpful to him.
Which particular book series?
This one, the one we're reading.
Oh, the one we're reading. Yeah,
if only he could read these books, he'd be like set.
He'd be so set.
Let's see. I wrote this down, where it says he got the birthday cards, which I guess it's good to know they got him here. I remember looking this up, maybe as it relates to Sirius, but it's like, how do owls find the person they're looking for?
Oh, yeah, yep.
Right? And there is writing about it on Pottermore, and it was like an article that somehow, in my years of doing research, I had never read, but the sentence is, there's always been a connection between names and the people who own them. Which is a fantastic sentence, by the way.
It's a really good sentence, and it's very...
very Name of the Wind.
Name of the Wind, which is our other favorite book series, but we won't get into that.
Yes, but apparently, even though this exists, owls like are innately tuned into it.
Okay.
And that is how they're able to like find anyone who they're looking for out in the wild.
It seems as well like there must be a layer of skill to owls, because people always do seem to commend Hedwig's remarkable abilities.
Yeah.
Like it seems like she's like really dialed into whatever this kind of magic
right.
is.
Right, yeah. She's very good at this particular kind of magic. But then if you're wondering like why doesn't the Ministry just send owls out and be like, where's Sirius Black? There are spells you can perform on yourself that make it so that only certain owls can find you,
right.
Which is why Hedwig is able to find Sirius, but other owls are not.
Because,
presumably.
I mean, you what you could have done a year ago is just basically write Sirius Black a letter and then just follow the owl.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So there's that. In case you're wondering.
But let's see here. And the reason, though, that Harry says that he doubts that consulting a book would be very useful is because, as far as he knew, he was the only living person to have ever survived a curse like Voldemort's, and therefore it was highly unlikely that he would find his symptoms listed in common magical ailments and afflictions.
Yeah. But it's also interesting, though. It's like he says, as far as he knew, he was the only living person to have survived a curse like Voldemort's, but like almost... certainly it means that someone else did survive something like that in history, because like otherwise how could like Voldemort will say like, this is ancient magic, I should have remembered, which is just like, okay, like there must be like accounts of it happening. You know, sacrificial protection is a known thing.
It's a known thing. You know what I love about that, though?
What?
Is that it opens the door in our founder series to use this.
Oh, yeah.
Because then it's sort of like, then like people would be like, wait, no, Harry's supposed to be the only one. And it's like, no. Only living person. Consult your book,
right? This was pre-Hogwarts. They weren't really doing much record keeping back then. It just sort of like happened out in the wild and like stories spread about it probably, maybe. I don't know.
Exactly. So now everybody who listens to the show, when we do that in our founder series that hopefully will happen, I'm manifesting right now, you guys can be the ones who like push your glasses up the brim of your nose and be like, actually we can be on that side of it, guys.
Yeah.
Glory.
Yeah. Yeah, right. Exactly. This is also, I think, then it says, per Hermione's his imagined suggestion for her, what Hermione will say, says, as for informing the headmaster, Harry had no idea where Dumbledore went during the summer holidays, which is just sort of like, Hedwig can find Sirius Black out in the wild, but you don't think you can find Dumbledore, who's like probably just at the school?
Probably there.
Yeah.
But he does amuse himself by imagining Dumbledore with his long silver beard and pointed hat stretched out on a beach somewhere, rubbing suntan lotion onto his long crooked nose.
Which actually does not sound very outside the realm of Dumbledore.
For whatever reason, I'm imagining him in like one of those like red and white striped like bathing, like full body bathing suits. Every time I read this scene.
Yeah, like his like bathing uniform or whatever they're called.
Yes.
Yeah.
The other thing I think is his long crooked nose. This is kind of like one of those funny pieces of lore that like actually is relevant.
Yeah.
And it's fun that like it's brought up so many times that he has this like crooked nose, and eventually you will discover that like it is something that happened with his brother Aberforth over
It's like during Ariana's funeral.
Ariana's funeral. Yeah. I was trying to remember if it's Ariana's or Kendra's. I think it's Ariana's.
Yeah. But it's interesting because like it's interesting that it's broken by someone punching him in the face, not by like magical or something. And you will like eventually learn that like Muggle things like that can be cured very quickly.
Yeah.
Like by magic. And like Harry's scar, on the other hand, is a scar that they can't get rid of because it is like a cursed scar.
Right.
But Dumbledore's nose remains crooked despite it being a Muggle injury, which then ends up speaking to Dumbledore's character.
Yeah.
Because it means that despite being super powerful and capable of fixing his nose at a moment's notice, he chooses to let it remain crooked because he blames himself for Ariana's death, and this is like his own form of like personal punishment.
Yes, it's like the reminder that lives square in the middle of his own reflection.
He feels he deserves to have been punched in the nose, and it's never laid out like very like in front of you like that. Like it doesn't like the book will never explain that to you, but like that is why.
Yeah. He's not faulting Aberforth either.
Right.
I mean, noble is probably the wrong word, but it's like he respects why Aberforth did it.
Yeah. Yeah. So he definitely just blames himself a lot, which he also will say in like King's Cross Station and stuff like that. So, in case you're wondering about Dumbledore's nose being crooked and why doesn't he ever fix it if he can just use magic?
A pisky.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
And then Harry, like, he's like talking himself at like, it's like you think in the back of his mind, he sort of already knows what he wants to do, but first, like, logically has to talk himself out of all of the obvious things he should do.
Right. Yes.
Which is to like write to Dumbledore or Ron or Hermione.
Yes.
But so he's like, what would I even say? Like, dear Professor Dumbledore, sorry to bother you. My scar hurt this morning. Yours sincerely, Harry Potter. He's like, that would sound so stupid. Why would I even say that? Maybe describe it in detail. Be like, I saw Wormtail with Voldemort and it was like the prediction from Professor Trelawney and he killed someone and he's plotting to kill me. Like, maybe bring all that up.
Right, yeah. It's
maybe
like,
bring all that up.
Harry, you have way more details here.
Yeah.
It's like you're leaving yourself at like the worst version of this explanation imaginable.
Yeah.
It's like, just add more information.
Add more detail.
And also, I don't feel like Dumbledore has really given you any reason at any point in time up until this moment to lead you to believe that he wouldn't care what you have to say.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So
give him the benefit of the doubt.
I know. To me, it definitely just feels more like Harry is trying to talk himself out of doing that or just ridiculous, ridiculous. And then he has the imagined Ron's response. What? Your scar hurt, but you know who can't be near you now, can he? I mean, you know, wouldn't you? He'd be trying to do you in again, wouldn't he? I don't know, Harry. Maybe a cursed scar's always twinge a bit. I'll ask Dad. which
spot on.
Spot on, Ronald. It's almost exactly what he says, too. Let's see. Mr. Weasley is a fully qualified wizard who works in the misuse of Muggle Artifact Office at the Ministry of Magic, which is just like this sentence is reminding you. It's setting you up for the Quidditch World Cup, where Ron's that is going to have to do a bunch of work, and you're going to get like a lot more like ministry information in this book. But like, yep, there you go. Just a reminder for the Quidditch World Cup. That's what Ron's dad does.
Yes, 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 yes. Yep. But then it goes on to say that like Harry didn't like the idea of the whole Weasley family knowing that Harry was getting jumpy about a few moments' pain. Mrs. Weasley would fuss worse than Hermione. And Fred and George, Ron's 16-year-old twin brothers, might think he was losing his nerve. The Weasleys were Harry's favorite family in the world. Oh. He was hoping that they might invite him to stay there anytime now. It's like Harry thinks that... this is someone who has the actual weight of the world on his shoulders. Doesn't think that a whole family who loves him with their whole hearts...
Right.
Would be like it's almost as if he told them this that they might like rescind their invitation.
I know, yeah. And he's like, he didn't want his visit punctuated with anxious inquiries about his scar, and is like, don't you tell them anyway? Like,
does he end up telling everybody? Like,
I don't know. Does he? I made notes that doesn't he tell them anyway? I mean, he tells Ron eventually. Anyway,
he does tell Ron eventually.
Right. He does tell Ron eventually. So there's that. But it's also just like maybe just include in your letter, like just, you know, don't tell everyone, or like why? Like, it's surprising to me that you think Ron would tell everyone
exactly
like that kind of private information.
Right.
Like they have known about your scar hurting before, you know.
Yes, and Harry and Hermione rather Ron and Hermione are phenomenal confidants. So anyway, yeah. But then it goes on to just have another really just devastating line.
Oh, okay.
Oh, I was going to say, I mean, you're going to call this frustrating.
I was going to say it's an extremely frustrating line.
Okay, well, I find it to be devastating.
Well, both. So maybe it's both.
I'll give you my perspective first.
Go.
Harry needed this forehead with his knuckles. What he really wanted, and it felt almost shameful to admit to himself, was someone like a parent.
Mm.
And it's just like, to me, it's like, again, I think this is such a small ask. It's like, why there is not an entire legion of people who have been like, Harry, we need you to know, at any point in time, if something is going on, you are more than welcome to communicate with us. And I think I know what you're going to say.
Well, okay, so you're right. There's a colon after what you just said. So pre-colon, very sad. Post-colon, infuriating.
Okay, go post-colon. Okay.
So, someone like a parent, colon, an adult wizard whose advice he could ask without feeling stupid, someone who cared about him, someone who had experience with dark magic. Well, golly, Harry, if I could think of just one person you'd done literally all of those things with last year, I don't know. What's his name? What's his name, Ben? Remus John Lupin, Harry?
Yeah.
Why he does not reach out to Lupin in this situation is beyond me. He spent two, maybe 3 minutes with Sirius last year. Like, Lupin had private lessons with him, had talks about souls, taught him the Patronus charm, like, gave him the benefit of the doubt, saved him from so many tricky situations.
He was
his defense against the dark arts teacher, someone who had experience with dark magic. Dude, are you kidding me? Like, Lupin is just so much more of a dad to Harry at this point than, like,
you're
Sirius
right.
is. You
okay,
know?
I bow to your argument.
Yeah,
I understand your frustration.
It's so annoying. Lupin's not even in this book.
It's true. It's true. And that's something that, like, I've always been, like, a total Sirius fan because I feel like I feel like you've always seemed more like the Remus and I've always seemed more like the Sirius.
Sure, sure.
And I think that was something that Prisoner completely unwound for me, especially spending so much more intimate time with Lupin in terms of like the way in which we were reading the saga.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, he Lupin really is a phenomenal human being.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Lupin, good man. And Harry forgot about him.
And yet, the solution came to him. It was so simple and so obvious. He couldn't believe it had taken him so long. Serious.
Yeah, sure, Harry. Whatever. Yeah,
whatever.
Sure.
So, yeah. Harry
somewhere lying in his bed, Remus Lupin just felt his own stab of pain.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So Harry leaps from his bed, hurried across the room, and sat down at his desk. He pulled a piece of parchment toward him, loaded his eagle feather quill with ink, wrote "Dear Sirius," then paused, wondering how to best phrase his problem, still marveling at the fact that he hadn't thought of Sirius straight away.
Oh, you know what, as I think about it, Remus Lupin also has a cursed scar.
Because he's a werewolf. Because
he's a werewolf.
Yeah, so he got bit by, you're right.
And this is a problem about cursed scars, you know?
Lupin would have been the person.
Couldn't believe I didn't think of it sooner. Harry. Anyway, whatever.
There was a simple reason for Sirius's complete absence from Harry's life until then. Sirius had been in Azkaban, the terrifying wizard jail guarded by creatures called Dementor, sightless, soul-sucking fiends who had come to search for Sirius at Hogwarts when he had escaped. Yet Sirius had been innocent. The murders for which he had been convicted had been committed by Wormtail, Voldemort's supporter, whom nearly everyone now believed dead. Harry, Ron, and Hermione knew otherwise, however. They had come face-to-face with Wormtail only the previous year, though only Professor Dumbledore had believed their story. And you might be thinking to yourself, Ben, that was a lot of the book to just like read point blank inside of this. I do so because we've basically just in one paragraph completely summarized all of Prisoner of Azkaban.
Oh my gosh, I know. Like I circled that exact paragraph and said, it took 4 chapters to tell this the first time.
Yes, yes. And there we are. Boom, bam.
Yeah, yeah.
And you said he only knew him for like 2 to 3 minutes. For one glorious hour, Harry had believed that he was leaving the Dursleys at last.
Well, he only spent for an hour, he believed that.
Oh, yeah.
Time spent with Sirius is like the walk from the Shrieking Shack to the Whomping Willow.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm so glad I didn't say lawyered because I was going to, and you totally would have got me back. That would have been a bummer.
So he has that walk. I mean, there's the conversation in the Shrieking Shack where they're explaining everything, but at that point, Harry doesn't know anything yet.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
There's that. And then like they free him, and he's like, go! And that's pretty much it.
Yeah. Okay. Good point.
Yeah. Oh, my goodness. Also, I love where it says there was a simple reason. Like, you know, there was a simple reason. There was a whole book's worth of information about it, but simple, yeah.
Yeah, simple.
Yeah. Good. Let's see. It said Sirius had offered him a home once, and once his name had been cleared, but the chance had been snatched away from him. It's like a reminder of Sirius's offer, which I think Sirius's offer is so important to the story because it represents the kind... It is a false hope, which never comes to pass in the story. Like, he will go live at Grimmauld Place, but he's not living with Sirius. Sirius is just sort of there while Harry's there. And it's like, it feels like the sort of thing you're being set up to, like, this is how the story might end. Like, you missed out on it, but eventually it's going to work out. Harry will defeat Voldemort, and him and Sirius will get to live together, and it'll be great. But, like, that will never happen. The offer will be put out there and wiped from the table without it ever coming to pass.
Yeah, I mean, it's sort of like the reverse of, like, Chekhov's gun, where the idea is that, like, if you introduce the gun in Act 1, then by Act 3 it needs to have gone off.
Right, yeah.
And this is sort of like... It's Chekhov's offer. It's like, you know, it's brought up and you're like, well, surely that means eventually it will happen. And I guess you're right. Like in Order of the Phoenix, you're right. Like it's sort of there. He lives in the same house as him, but they are not getting to live together the way that I imagine Sirius. And
Harry. Yeah. No, it's not what like is promised.
Exactly.
In any capacity. Yeah. No. Let's see. We also get, it just says, you know, Harry helped him escape in the back of a hippogriff called Buckbeak, which I just crossed out and wrote Wither Wings. Oh, come on, Harry.
Good save. Yeah.
Close one. Someone almost caught on.
Right.
The home Harry might have had if Wormtail had not escaped and been haunting him all summer. Yeah, that must be even worse, though, to go back to the Dursleys and be like, I was so close. Well, don't know if he actually would have been allowed to, given the situation.
Right. But there is the one silver lining. It says, nevertheless, though seriously, Sirius had been of some help to Harry, even if he couldn't be with him. It was due to Sirius that Harry now had all of his school things in his bedroom with him. The Dursleys had never allowed this before. The general wish of keeping Harry as miserable as possible, something that they take a lot of joy in doing, coupled with their fear of his powers, had led them to lock his school trunk in the cupboard under the stairs after every school prior to this. But their attitude had changed since they had found out that Harry had a dangerous murderer for a godfather, and Harry had conveniently forgotten to tell him that Sirius was innocent.
I know. I highlighted that and I was like, as if they'd care.
I know, right? Right, yeah.
Like, oh no, don't worry. I do have a godfather who did escape from prison, but don't worry, he's innocent, so really nothing to worry about.
Not a big deal.
Yeah, like, I don't think they'd be like, oh, okay, we'll just keep being mean to you then.
Right. Yep.
But it does. There is mention that Harry has received two letters from Sirius since he'd been back at Privet Drive, which is fantastic. I'd love to know what they said, but we'll never find out. Both have been delivered not by owls, as was usual with others, but by large, brightly colored tropical birds that Hedwig had not approved of, which is a really interesting sentence because it's like, can all birds deliver mail?
I know this is a very interesting question. And it's an even more interesting question because of like, it's like, where is Sirius like in the world?
Yeah.
Because
Majorca?
Maybe. But I was doing some research to try to figure out what type of large tropical birds exist in this region of the planet, because I've always imagined like a macaw, but like those are like only like South American.
Mm-hmm.
And so like then I'm kind of going through the list of like Eurasian birds, and there really just aren't that many super tropically colored ones.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Yeah, the one I decided to go with was the Eurasian griffin vulture, because he does say that it could barely fit through the window.
Oh.
And so it needs to be a quite large bird.
Right, yeah. So
this is unfortunately not a terribly colorful bird, but it has the word griffin in it,
which is why I picked it
for that reason.
I've always imagined like a heron or a crane or like a flamingo or something.
A flamingo,
right?
That's pretty good.
That'd be pretty funny.
A flamingo would be hilarious. Right? Just like chilling in
Harry's room. Hey, what's that? It's a flamingo. Why?
What of it?
Yeah. Problem?
I was going to go let it graze in the yard.
Yeah. The neighbors will just be like, oh, they got a real flamingo. Very fancy.
Very, very fancy. Yeah. They are so worldly.
They are so worldly. Yes, but I guess other birds can deliver mail. It just seems like owls must be the best at it, because obviously Harry does get mail from them. So
exactly. Yep.
Yeah. Then says, somehow Harry found it hard to imagine Dementor surviving long in the bright sunlight. Perhaps that's why Sirius had gone south. So we know he's south somewhere, I guess. How far south?
South is the question.
Yeah,
Majorca?
Maybe. But that is an interesting note that, like, could Dementor survive like at the beach or something? And it's like, probably not really. Like, they sort of like feed on like despair and gloominess and stuff like that, and like, which they also spread. So like, sort of like by being there, maybe it's like almost like a phoenix in an egg. It's like, if you get enough Dementor somewhere, it'll probably just make it gloomier. But like, they almost wouldn't be places where it's not already gloomy.
Right. Yeah, you're right. Yeah. So I think if there was like a reason for them to be like a whole bunch of them down there, then it would probably just make for like a misty, overcast, more coolish kind of weather for that environment, but it would take a lot of them to succeed in that mission.
Yeah, and like typically the beach people are pretty happy, so I don't think they'd have much to feed on.
I like to think that they would get sunburnt.
Yeah, you think so?
Yeah.
I think they just kind of like dissipate.
maybe so, but yeah. Not before, even if they put on like SPF like 1000, yeah. I like to think it just doesn't work.
It just doesn't work, yeah. Like, you think like those robes get just like burnt?
Yeah.
Like they behave like skin.
I have no empathy for Dementors.
No, so. Me neither. Yeah. So. Not at all. Maybe that's why they're wearing the robes, because they're like, if we get exposed to sun at all, like,
right.
Bad news. Like, yes. We burn like, man. Yeah.
Like mayonnaise.
They burn like mayonnaise.
That's a thing.
Does mayonnaise burn?
I don't actually know. Does it work as sunscreen? I doubt it.
I wouldn't try it. But I feel like, I mean, you put like mayonnaise on like the backside of some toast and like put it on the skillet, make some grilled cheese. You know, it's pretty tasty.
That's pretty tasty. Do you think Dementors like grilled cheese?
I doubt it. That's way too happy. That's like comfort food, and they are like the opposite of that.
Good point. It would just destroy them from within.
Yeah.
So that's the real trick.
Feed them a grilled cheese.
Patronus or a grilled cheese.
Yeah. Don't feed them souls. Feed them soul food.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Nailed it.
Got it. All right. Well, we've tangented on Dementor food long enough, I think. Let's see. We get mention that Sirius's letter were now hidden beneath the highly useful loose floorboard, which I got to say, it is highly useful. And like, how, like, I'm even just looking here at the floor here where we have floorboards. And like, these look like bigger planks than many a place, and like, they're still pretty skinny. Harry is fitting a ton of stuff under the floor.
I know. And it also just seems so unlikely for Privet Drive, which I can only imagine is like a recent build,
to be
old enough to have loose floorboards.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah,
so I mean, it's a little surprising. It but is. I have always, my whole life, wanted my own loose floorboard.
Maybe you should install one.
I know. Yeah. Yeah. Maybe if we ever have like a fun new office, we could like dig a hole and like put like a little like thing over it, and then just like hide candies and snacks.
Oh my gosh! Yeah, we could like build secret passages into it on purpose.
I like this.
Be like, oh wow, this is like, how'd you guys get down here? And be like, don't worry about it.
Don't worry about it.
Don't worry about it. I don't have a secret stairwell somewhere that leads to a private bathroom. It's fine. Why do you ask?
The throne room, as we like to call it.
The throne room, yeah, exactly. Exactly.
We are so off our hinges today.
We are a little bit. That's okay. So Harriet does start writing to Sirius. Says, Dear Sirius, thanks for your last letter. That bird was enormous. Yeah, so we already sort of talked about the bird. It could hardly get through my window. There's a fun thing in the letter where he says, he gives him an update on Dudley, which is kind of funny. He says they told him they'd have to cut his pocket money if he keeps doing it. So he got really angry and chucked his PlayStation out the window, which is just like the tiniest little anachronism here, because the date, as we know in the book, is what? August 16th. August 16th, 1994. And PlayStations didn't come out in Japan until December of 1994. And then in like the Europe and America until like later the next year, into 1995. So Dudley either has some really, really, really high connections with Sony, which I doubt. Or else there's no way for him to have a PlayStation yet.
Yep. And I also think it's funny because it says that's a sort of computer thing you can play games on. Bit stupid, really. Now he hasn't even got Mega Mutilation Part 3 to take his mind off things.
Yeah.
One, Mega Mutilation 3, just trivia.
Fake game.
Two, also. it's a fake game. It's like, why bring up PlayStation and not just use like a real game like Tony Hawk Pro Skater?
I know, right? The obvious game he would probably be playing. Probably. Also, not for nothing, but I love that Harry says it's a sort of computer thing you can play games on. Bit stupid, really. And talking about PlayStation, when Hogwarts Legacy was like the highest selling game on PlayStation ever last year.
So, how the turntables have turned.
Oh, how the tables have turned, Harry. How stupid are they now, huh? Not that you're seeing any of that, I suppose. But let's see. So he says, how does he, like, oh, yeah, so this is his letter to Sirius. Says, a weird thing happened to me this morning. My scar hurt again. Last time that happened, it was because Voldemort was at Hogwarts, but I don't reckon he can be anywhere near me now, can he? Do you know if cursed scars sometimes hurt years afterwards? Like, okay, why couldn't you write that to Dumbledore? You know, you were like, oh, what would I even say to Dumbledore? Like that, at least that.
That, yeah.
Yeah.
Completely reasonable.
Yeah, just copy it out there. Anyway, which also, for what it's worth, it does not matter because Sirius just tells Dumbledore that everything that Harry tells him.
Right.
Yeah, so he's like going to be completely aware of this. And I think he will even say like, you know, you're not
the only one in correspondence with Sirius.
Yeah, well, because he's going to bring up Harry's scar hurting here later in the book.
Yeah.
And he's going to be like, how did you know that? And he's like, I'm not the only one. Which is like really funny because what Harry's looking for here is someone he can confide in. And the one person he tells someone else.
Tell someone else.
Yeah. He's like worried Ron is going to do this. And Sirius does it immediately.
Yes. But just happens to be to somebody else that is trustworthy enough to have that information.
Exactly. Yeah. So it's not like a huge deal or anything. And it's good that he has that information. It's just funny that like what Harry is looking for, and like what he's afraid of happening happens anyway.
Yes. Yeah. But then it goes on to say, yes, thought Harry, that looked all right. There was no point putting in the dream. He didn't want to look as though he was being too, or as though he was too worried.
Oh my gosh. I highlighted there was no point putting in the dream. I was just like, yes, there is. Like,
yes, I know. Like, it's like, come on, Harry.
I know. Didn't want it to look as though he was too worried. He was like, oh yeah, that's what's important here. Prophecy, Harry. Prophecy. Come on. Not that he knows about it, but whatever. Anyway, so Harry doing a very bad job on informing people about what happened. But a nice recap of where all the characters are as we start the book. Let's see. And then after that, just says, without glancing at his reflection, he started to get dressed before going down to breakfast. And that is the end of chapter 2.
Boom, bam. Look at that. I mean, and this is exactly what happened last time. We ended up going well over an hour on a chapter that basically just tells us mostly information that we already knew.
Well, you know, there's lots to talk about, Ben.
I know. We always have a lot to talk about when it comes to Harry Potter.
We sure do. We sure do.
Yeah. What an enjoyable recap chapter. Probably one of my favorites.
Boy, you know what, though? I feel like we've been doing these scathing reviews of, like, we did Oliver Wood, we did Hagrid. here recently.
Yeah.
I feel like if we ever get to the point about Harry, I'm going to spend like a whole page being like, you didn't write to Lupin right here.
Yeah, yeah, there you go. Yeah,
there's
yeah,
my scathing review of Harry Potter.
Chapter 2, Goblet of Fire. Let's go.
Let's go.
That's all the source material we need.
All I need, you know? Harry doesn't do a whole lot of things wrong, but the disrespect
to Lupin.
This chapter. Ugh. In particular.
Just drive it crazy.
Crazy.
So do we have a review for today?
We sure do, Ben. Allow me. All right, Ben. Our review today is by Magic Mistake. They say, hey, brother, fan from New Zealand. Thank you for this podcast. No one in my life reads Harry Potter. It's nice to have, for the first time, someone to read alongside with. Dude, heard. I got you, man. We see you.
We see you.
We see you.
That's why we're here doing this together.
Dude, I play a game on my phone, Marvel Snap.
Yeah.
It is like extremely popular. Like apparently like 80 million people have downloaded the app according to the stats. I know not a single one of those people.
How is that even possible?
I don't know. It's whatever. It's annoying. It's fine. Someone I know will eventually play it and we can chat about it and it'll be great.
It'll be great.
But in the meantime, back to Magic Mistake. I have a theory about why Peeves is afraid of the Bloody Baron. Poltergeists are the manifestation of a particular attending quality, e.g. rule-breaking, then perhaps the students at that time, as well as relentless rule-breaking, harbored an extreme fear of the Bloody Baron. And this quality manifested in parallel with rule-breaker into Peeves the Poltergeist. But we can go even further. Perhaps the Bloody Baron was a live man brought into the school as a last resort to bring the rule-breaking under control. This would explain why the rule-breaking and fear of the Bloody Baron coincided.
Oh, thoughts. Dang. Interesting. Interesting. I like the idea that, like, Peeves himself's manifestation is, like, simultaneously ingrained with this other, like, known fear.
Yes, absolutely. I absolutely love that idea that, like, the Bloody Baron is a scary ghost.
Yeah.
And the students are afraid of him. And they're like rule breakers and stuff. Like, yeah, because he's the manifestation of all the rule breaking, but like they're all also afraid of the Bloody Baron. And so is Peeves.
And so is Peeves.
Like,
yeah.
That tracks so well to me.
Because when it really boils down to it, like almost nothing that Peeves is like his own.
Right.
Like because Peeves is like the reflection of all of like the students' sensations in a way, and I mean, you know, focus specifically on that rule breaking aspect. It's like, yeah, like everything he does is really just things that students have thought to do.
Yeah, and I mean, like even I want to say, like in the first, like one of the three books, like at the one of the feasts, like Harry looks over and like the Bloody Baron is sitting next to Draco or something, and he's looking like very uncomfortable about it. So like even the Slytherins are a little spooked by their
right.
own house ghost.
Right.
So
right,
like
right.
that tracks a lot to me. The second half of this about perhaps the Bloody Baron was a live man brought into the school as a last resort to bring the rule breaking under control. We know a little bit about the Bloody Baron, and that is not the case. The Bloody Baron was a real person, and he was taught by Salazar Slytherin himself during the time the founders were alive, like
yep.
pre-Chamber of Secrets break from the school, sort of stuff like that.
Right.
And he was in love with Helena Ravenclaw.
Yeah, Rowena's daughter.
Yeah, Rowena's daughter. And so when Helena stole the diadem and fled the school, the Bloody Baron was, or just the Baron at that point, was sent to try and find her. And then what happens when he finds her? Like he stabs himself?
Yeah. So yeah. Basically, I think she like spurs his advance and he stabs her.
Oh.
And that's how she dies.
Oh, okay. Yeah. He stabs her. That's how she dies. And then he feels so bad he stabs himself.
Correct.
Right. And he wears the chains as like penance.
Penance. Yep.
Yeah.
Okay. Exactly.
There we go. That's the full story. So that's the story of the Bloody Baron. But I love the idea that Peeves is afraid of him because the students are afraid of him.
No, I know. I think that's, yeah. I think that's really thoughtful. That's very good. I think it fits. Totally works with the character. It is curious though, like to go over because like, I think that we've got a whole video about how, like Rowena and the Ravenclaw family could have been like the forerunners to, I think, the Blacks is what we ultimately ended up coming up with. Because there's like this like layer of like royalty that almost seems like must be the case because what I think is really interesting about that time period in particular is that the Bloody Baron, if he's being taught by Salazar Slytherin, is a pureblood. And if he's a Baron, it means that he is inside of the royal hierarchy.
Right.
Which would also mean that both of his parents would be royals of some kind.
Of some kind for like England of the day.
England of the day.
Because otherwise, where's he getting the title from?
Right. Because we don't have, I'm pretty sure even like when Harry asks about like the Half-Blood Prince, like Lupin says, like, there are no wizarding princes. Like,
right.
That's not like there is no royalty for wizards.
Well, they're not that there's no royalty, they just that there's maybe no prince.
Okay, there's no prince.
Right. Like, but it, you're right. But like, it even continues to track that like Slytherin House might be associated with the royal line itself because Merlin was in Slytherin. And know that he worked for like King Arthur.
Yep.
Like, and so in that case, like, he, like, a member, like, the royalty is aware of the magic.
You're right. Yeah. And then, I mean, on top of that, this is also where you have to wonder, like, if what level Rowena is integral to sort of like everything happening, because even like her artifact happens to be a crown, you know, which feels like, you know,
who wears crowns, right?
If not royalty.
And it's like, you could say, like, you know, and like, if you're a baron, then the person you're like trying to marry is probably of at least equal status.
Of equal status,
which is not like a hard and fast rule or anything, but if you're in Slytherin House and Slytherin's alive and you care about that sort of thing, it feels like he's the kind of guy who would care about titles.
I would agree with you. Yeah. Like, it doesn't feel like that would be a reach based on everything else that we know about all the other corresponding parties.
Yeah.
So anyway, I just always think that that's very interesting to delve into, because I also have this headcanon a little bit that Hogwarts of that time isn't necessarily for like 11 to 17 year olds, because it would be like, it seems conceivable to me that like the Baron wouldn't have to be a teenager necessarily to be there.
Yeah. I agree. He seems like, like, I don't know. You never get the idea that he's like a young-looking ghost or something, which, you know.
I mean, same thing. This goes back to the James and Lily points I was making earlier. Like, you never really get the idea that they were supposed to be, like, 20.
Right.
21.
Right.
And
what's interesting, too, about that whole story is that, like, it obviously means Rowena was married, or I guess not necessarily married, but obviously she has a child.
Yes. So where does that heritage?
So where does the heritage come from? Is like, was she a Ravenclaw to begin with, or did she like marry into the name? You know,
I mean, it's the way in which she wears it feels like it's her name.
Right.
And it's alliterative, which I mean, there's a 1 in 26 chance there, you know, in terms of the marrying somebody who happened to become alliterative.
Right.
But that's like, I don't know. Their names, each of their names feel so distinctly theirs.
They absolutely do. I mean, I know. That's the thing. That's the thing.
Yeah.
But it's like, then, like, was she married? What, did she just get pregnant and have a kid?
Right. I mean, but that's another one, too, where it's like, if she's born of, like, a known British royal family of sorts, and she is of House Ravenclaw, and, you know, were to meet somebody of, like, the noble house of Black, then you could even see a world where, like, maybe she is a half-blood, Rowena. We don't know that she would be a pure-blood.
We don't know.
So, like, if she is, like, a half-blood from, like, this royal family, and then she would, you know, and then be courted by somebody from the noble house of Black, like, they would be of similar stature by way of, like, you know, wizarding hierarchy versus British hierarchy.
Right.
But maybe then Ravenclaw keeps her name because she is of this otherwise importance. At this point in time, I think we're literally just like in the writing room spitballing.
I know. I'm just like, it's so hard to know. Like, you know, I can see a scenario where she was like in love and she got pregnant and then her fiance dies. So, you know, she ends up keeping her name, and then Helena has her name as well,
right?
Instead of being named after the father,
I think loss is going to be a big theme.
Loss is going to be a big theme. Yeah. Absolutely, it's going to be a big theme. I love the idea to, like, I mean, we always talk about like Slytherin himself has got to be like the like his story feels like it's the central story.
Yeah, I mean,
you know,
in a way. His will be the one that... His is the one that we, like, you will be fighting the whole time trying to figure out how his legacy is his legacy based on who he is as a person.
Right, right. Like, yeah, because you'll know the future, but, like, obviously they won't.
Yes.
So, like, you know, it's always made it seem like, oh, he cares about purebloods because he's just, like, racist or whatever.
Right, right.
But it's like, you know, if you have a time period where anyone who is, like, a trace of magical blood in them is being, like, hunted and killed by gullible townsfolk, then, you know, maybe you don't want, like, maybe he has, like, better reasons for not wanting people who are, like, half-bloods to come to the school because their parents will tell people and then they will come get killed.
Yeah, yeah.
Right,
yeah.
And it's like, which is still not, like, a great opinion, but.
No, but I mean, yeah, it's,
like,
I think.
It's, like, more reasonable or something.
At bare minimum, if at that point in time where we would know that the perspectives of people of the world would be drastically different, you know, I mean, and especially if they're seeing Hogwarts as like a safe haven,
yeah,
for this type of thing, it's like, you know, he's going in there and it's like, we made this place to be safe,
right?
You could see where that protective instinct is not coming from a dislike for non-magical people, but rather just like a fear.
Yeah, you also have to feel like he almost, like, something happens to his wife.
Yes.
Almost,
yes.
Certainly, which has also got to be a huge, that is obvious, because he has heirs. You know?
He has heirs.
He has heirs.
It's like the thing nobody talks about nearly enough.
No one talks about it enough.
How else can Tom Riddle be the heir of Slytherin?
Unless he had heirs. The Gaunts are direct descendants of Slytherin.
Right.
You know, so like, where is this coming from? Who was his wife? He has a locket, for God's sakes. That's his item.
I know.
A locket. A locket is a thing between people in love, you know?
Right. What do you put in a locket? You put the photograph of the person you love.
I'm pretty sure it's a heart-shaped locket, right?
I don't know.
I think we've talked about this before. I think we have. I don't know.
I don't know. I mean, I don't ever... I have started to picture it as the prop.
I know. Yeah. I will double check it. I think it might... Anyway, we're getting way off the rails here. I have other reasons why I think Slytherin could be like pure blood minded, but I won't give everything away. Anything be manifested, you know.
Yes, yes. If you want the full story, please get a selection of our books.
Yes, yes, indeed.
just being a little Lockhart for you there.
There you go. Right. Yeah. Yes, I'll publish semi-published works there, but that is going to do it for this episode of Through the Gryffindor. Make sure you join us next week for Goblet of Fire, Chapter 3, The Invitation, here on Through the Gryffindor.
Today's episode was edited by Isabel Chrisley. Vaishon Brandon does our art. Catherine Stein is our production manager, and the show is hosted by me and Jonathan Carlin.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Y'all, I am so excited because Through the Gryffindor is heading back out on tour. Starting in February of 2025, we'll be performing live shows in Charlotte, Orlando, Tampa, Jacksonville, Atlanta, and Nashville. And as always, we will be bringing all of the magic with a tour-long Jay versus Ben trivia showdown with questions submitted and asked by all of you. And then, of course, we will dim the lights for a live recording of Through the Gryffindor. And y'all, these nights have made for some of my all-time favorite since we have started making content on the internet. It is truly a magical evening, nerding out Harry Potter style with the very best community online. Plus, we have a VIP upgrade for each show if you want to come and meet Jay and I, take photos, ask questions, and score an exclusive signed tour poster before the show begins. We would love to see you. We'd love to meet you, and we hope you will come and join us for all of the fun. Tickets are available in the show notes for every show or at supercarlinbrothers.com.